Hey, it's Emily, your favorite PodRocket producer. Did you know that LogRocket has a TikTok now? You can catch up on all the interview clips from this show, watch UX tutorials, and get more great content from LogRocket. You can check out the LogRocket TikTok today at log.rocket. See you on TikTok.
Hi there, and welcome to PodRocket, a web development podcast brought to you by LogRocket. LogRocket provides AI-first session replay and analytics, which surface the UX and technical issues impacting user experiences. Start understanding where your users are struggling today and go try it for free at logrocket.com. My name is Paul, and joining with me is Roy Dirks. He's a developer experience at IBM, and we're here to talk about LLMs for specifically web developers. And man, we have an audience that is technical and folks that like to make web apps. So this is going to be a good one. Excited to dig into it. Welcome to the podcast, Roy.
Thanks. Nice to meet you, Paul.
So LLM for web developers, what does that mean? Are we talking about a framework? Are we talking about a way that IBM is plugging into LLMs in particular for the modern tech stack? Or is it a variety of different setups? Because I would like to talk about your favorite one as the first question hopping into our conversation.
I guess if you talk about how developers use large language models, it's in two ways. It's either to boost around developer productivity while coding something like in your editor, or it is developers building solutions on top of AI. So I like both. The code editor, it's really exciting when you're doing your job. But the one where you take AI and you build solutions on top of it, it's what really excites me.
When you take AI and you build solutions on top of it, are we talking like agents and customer service and ordering? And
yeah, so it's developers building like applications like they normally build. But instead of just building something in like a deterministic way, where if I take something from a database and I transform it and I show it to a user and I connect these different APIs, I get an app. That's what we used to do. And today we say, I'm going to take a large language model, I'm going to take my database, I'm going to take APIs, and it magically all comes together. And now you have an agent being able to do so much more than what you were able to do before, where you had to hard code all these different routes between different data sources.
Let's jump the gun here on questions and doing a quick deep dive here, Roy. But you mentioned agents, and I think a lot of folks who listen to this podcast are familiar with the term agents and have even been pretty deep building their own agents. What's something you feel like you see time to time again of people attempting to take a stab at a good agentic production ready system and having it fall short? One common one that I've seen people tout on YouTube is, listen, you're answering queries from a database. You don't need 11 agents strung together. That's one people typically point out. Would you agree with that? And what are some other ones that come to mind?
So the one agent you shouldn't be building today is like a weather agent. I feel like every new framework is going to show a weather agent as their demo. And I think developers are done seeing weather agents. So I don't think that's a good use case. You see two kind of agents today, people optimizing business processes. And then everything that Cursor is doing or WinServe or any of the other code editors using AI, they're building agents to help you do stuff. So if you, instead of writing a prompt where you say, I don't know, give me a function to do X, Y, or Z in Python, you now get a complete application. And I guess that's where agents really shine. It works well for business processes, but I'm a developer. I like to build developer tools. So I'm fine with people building customer service agents, but it doesn't excite me as much. So my one tip, yeah, if you build your first agent, don't build a weather agent because everyone does it. I'd say build something that relates to you, either your day job or whatever excites you in personal life. Or if you're like me, you build developer tools. Build something developers can use to make their workflows a little bit better.
So you're big on building developer tools. Do you see folks either throwing the agent solution in a space or area or layer of all the stacks out there that you're just like, I don't know if this is best suited for an agent?
Yeah, I guess the term agent is broad. So I've been doing some research. Yeah. I'm not a researcher, but I'm always browsing the internet for interesting stuff. The term agent is 40, 50 years old. So it's not even related to whatever we see today. So everyone is saying like 2025 is the year of agents. And it's mostly because agents finally break through. It's like a really old concept that finally came to life because we have these large language models. And even then, if you look at agents, you have the very simple React agent where you're doing some tool calling and it isn't that complex. And then you have agents which are like multi-state agents or multi-agent systems. So the term agents, it's, I don't know, it feels, it doesn't get really abused, but it's broad and you can build an agent in 5 minutes and you can build one in 5 days. It's really up to you, whatever you put in the middle. I'd say if you have an agent taking one or two tools, you already build an agent. Will you get real value from it? Maybe you do, but you probably need more tools and you might need multi-agent. I do feel multi-agent is the age-old microservices discussion. Do we need to split up our API in 5 different smaller APIs and somehow orchestrate them together? I feel the agent versus multi-agent is a bit like this. People like to over-engineer stuff before they actually get the beginnings to work. So yeah, the agent space is broad and I see developers building all sorts of cool stuff and playing around with different frameworks. And I don't really know if people are bringing multi-agent systems into production yet though. I think it's mostly smaller agents, containerized, people trying to do stuff, but they're afraid something might break or the agent is going to go off in the wild and do all sorts of things you don't want them to do.
That's great. I love getting different viewpoints, vantage points on what folks who are deep in this space are seeing in the industry. So that's really helpful. Thank you for that. Given what you're seeing, people building agents and maybe some singular, not multi-single agent workflows in production, do you feel like folks are mostly using OpenAI's APIs, local models? I know people say, oh yeah, the local models are great, but there's still this gap in terms of ease of use, ability to deploy a reliable system. So then a quick follow-up question would be, when do you see people using the locally hosted ones? Because that's like the golden standard that we all want to build towards, is full control over your stack.
Yeah. I don't think too many people are hosting their own models for an agent they bring into production and expose to the outside world. I think people doing it locally, like for example, I automate part of my day-to-day job using local models. So you can build an agent, run it on your machine and hook it up to Ollama or VLM and have a local model available. I think if you bring it to production, you probably need it somewhere where it scales well. So OpenAI is one example. At IBM, we have our own platform to host models. Anthropic is doing a great job with providing over the cloud. And then you have a bunch of startups providing access to models that are able to scale pretty well. I think the locally models, people just use them to try out stuff on their own machine. Maybe work from a long flight. So I fly a lot. I have a Llama running on my machine and I'm using Llama 3.2 to get me productive while I'm on a plane. So locally models are great, but I think if you expose it to customers, you really need it somewhere where it's scalable and you get control over the costs. But then again, you have things like DeepSeek, which seem to scale well on relatively small containers. So I guess there will be a future for people to host their own models that are relatively low cost.
As long as you're not in Italy, where it's banned. So now that people are starting to build more production-ready applications with these models, an interesting quote that I've seen online is, welcome to LLMs, welcome to agents. It's the worst database you'll ever use. It has the coolest output. And I feel like that paints a really cool color or outlines the space really well. So off of that thought, what are some actual challenges that you see people having when developing these for? I want to be clear, this is production-ready applications.
So the one major thing I see is getting LLMs to do something somewhat deterministic. So assume you're building an agent or you're building something around tools where you have your APIs, you have your databases, you're connecting to these sources, and you want the LLM to orchestrate the collection of data from these different APIs or databases. So assume you have something that needs multiple data sources to be called. So let's take the example of what we saw before, like Replit agent or some other agent in Cursor building an app for you. You probably wanted to look at your GitHub data. You want to get pull requests in there. You want to get maybe context on the application. You then have a prompt. You maybe have external data you want to pull in. In order for the LLM to orchestrate this, you need to do a lot of prompting. So your system prompt needs to be really good. The tool definitions need to be really good. And then the model should be sophisticated enough that it understands all sorts of different abstraction layers those tools have. So if you do this, and you might get it to work once or twice, if you want it to run the same question like 100 times, you might get different output every time. So trying to make these LLMs behave deterministically and run through a workflow is where I see companies struggling still if they want to bring something in production. So there's a lot of things we need to improve on, like the tool calling side, on how do you create your tools? How do you make sure these data sources are understandable for large language models? And also the models keep improving. They add reasoning, which I personally really like, but the more sort of intelligence you would put in a model, the harder it will be to get a deterministic output, because maybe one time it's saying X, the other time it's saying Z. You can play with temperature, you can play with prompts, but forcing the model in a specific direction every time and get controllable and consistent results is something I see companies struggling with.
Do you feel like it, in any way, that this observation that you have degrades the applicability of these actually working in production today? Or do you feel like we're 6, 8, 12 months behind that curve at the time of this recording, which is February 19th, 2025.
I guess it will be hard to put a specific time frame on it, but I guess everyone listening, they've played with different tools. They tried agents, like maybe built their own agents. You probably had something that worked yesterday and then today it doesn't. And maybe the first time you're using a coding agent, it's going to give you the perfect application. And the next time you'll be like, this wasn't really what I expected. I'm hoping this will improve, but I'm getting ready for a stage where the models are, they continue to get better, but at some point they're only going to get slightly better and not a whole lot better every day. So then the application layer where you build your agents is the place where you need to improve and you need to do better. And you can do better by improving the whole way we call tools, we build agents, we interact with data sources. And I feel a lot of things, there's a lot of space there to improve and to win and build tools for agents. So what I see a lot of companies doing, they already have their APIs. They build APIs for the web apps or the mobile app or maybe for some integration. And they would instantly expect those APIs to work well when they hand them over to a large language model, which in my opinion isn't really the case, because there might be too much data available in these APIs. There might be weird constructs, large language models don't understand. Maybe you're feeding different API specifications into a model. Assume you have a database, so the model needs SQL to get data from the database. Then it might need OpenAPI or GraphQL to get data from your APIs. And then maybe you also have a JSON file. So if you're feeding the large language models all these different API protocols, it's going to get confused and it's going to hallucinate. And there's a lot of space to win there by making sure you have one abstraction layer for all your data rather than five different ones, which is a copy paste from the ones you already had.
That's super interesting. It's calling out the, you've got to prepare your infrastructure to be palpable for an LLM if it's not already. And there's different levels of how effective it can be. Having tooled with agents myself and messed around in different frameworks, and I've never thought about the fact of, hey, yeah, like open API YAML works great. There's also JSON spec. There's also GraphQL spec. There's all these different ways that you can describe an API. And if you're talking three different languages to your LLM, it might get a little confused. That's super interesting. Thanks for that.
Especially if you combine them. If you use one, it's typically fine. If you're going to start combining them, the LLM is going to get really confused.
I also think it's interesting to hear from you. You might see a different output tomorrow. And there are small improvements that are going to keep happening with the LLMs, but it's going to take a lot of refinement and working outside of the black box sort of to get these production ready as we explore the space with these new powerful models. Given the work that's going to be done in 2025, building towards that goal, which is going to be an ever-moving goalpost, what do you see today? What are people building today that you're like, that works well, I would feel comfortable deploying this under my name?
So what I see happening a lot is the vertical agents in like QA and testing and bringing your code to production. So there's a ton of startups like helping you to turn GitHub issues into working code. And I think those startups are doing good because you have a code base in GitHub or GitLab or whatever you host your code. You have GitHub issues, which should be describing whatever needs to happen. So it's a isolated location already. And I see a ton of startups like helping companies to do better there. Take your GitHub issue. Maybe it's an open source project and you notice something doesn't work. If you describe your issue well enough, and you also provide the code base, you're actually able to replicate it by running it somewhere and have the agent see what might be going wrong, like look at the different error messages, trying to figure out how to translate these messages to actual code. And for simple things, I can see it is working quite well. Also for testing purposes, if you want a large language model, for example, to work with your tools, you can have a tool to spin up your website, go in a browser, follow a different path. If you think about computer use or browser use, these sort of tools, you can actually do some QA testing by an agent instead of having a human do this. And the QA testing, for example, it's quite a large space. If you've been building web apps, you probably have tested like a million different tools years ago, trying to replicate user behavior in a browser and automate it. It's going to cost you a lot of time and it doesn't work because sometimes you miss something. I'm really confident in agents being able to do QA testing for your website.
That's neat. And that's also a very time intensive thing. You need a human to poke around or you need somebody to code up your Playwright scripts to do it. And those are ever changing. It's not like a constant silver bullet.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been in engineering management and sort of over the years, you can see a lot of companies stepping away from manual testing or even QA engineers and pushing this onto the developer. So every company has different code standards, but a lot of companies today, I feel they expect developers to produce code that is well-tested and robust. And if developers can save time by having some agent helping them to test their website, test their code, it's going to be really good for developers to be more efficient.
On the topic of how developers might be using it in this QA example, in general, how do you think in 12 months we're going to see the uses of LLMs change the software developers day to day, specifically like somebody that might be on your team?
For me, it's still the code editors, especially if you look at everything you can do with things like Cursor and Windsurf. It's what startups use or developers use for personal projects. If you look at bigger companies, they're still gaining access to these tools because they feel those tools might duplicate code. Those tools might hallucinate. They might create wrong code. There might be code that doesn't adhere to our coding standards. So I think the one big push that needs to happen is make sure these agents, these coding agents, work well for bigger companies where there are standards, where there might be requirements from government perspective. Maybe your company is producing code for governments. They probably have different requirements than when you're producing code as a startup and you're just trying to find more users every day.
Yeah,
so it's going to happen, I hope, in the next 12 months. But for me, seeing some enterprise-ready coding agents would be really nice.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that needs to happen with governments. Like AWS is a whole separate company, a sub-company underneath them, the FedRAMP, to manage the separation of your clouds and stuff. This is one interesting thing Microsoft has done by letting people spin up their own models privately hosted through Azure with OpenAI. Kind of encapsulation of certain pieces of your data. And it just hails back to what you were saying at the beginning of our podcast. It's the infrastructure around the LLMs that is arguably equally important as what's being done in the black box itself and how we handle that. So in general, I'm hearing software developers using AI to go faster, to expand their skill set and what they can do. Nowhere in here are we hearing replacement. That also makes me wonder, how is this going to change the skill curve in your eyes? Some people say, oh, now we're going to get really inexperienced developers breaking in and actually being able to do just enough to pass that minimum bar. But what are we actually hiring in the individual? The skill set's not that high. It's just an augmented skill set. On the other side of the argument, you have people saying, in order to effectively use the LLMs, you really have to have that experience. You have to know how to tickle it correctly to get an actual enterprise quality output. So in fact, the skill curve is going to move more towards folks who already have experience. It's going to make breaking into the field even harder. Two separate opinions. Where are you reading this?
I'm somewhere leaning in where I feel it's going to make developers more productive. If you think about maybe when you first started working at a company and you felt you were super productive, you were creating tons of code, you felt good about the work you're doing. Then you bring it in for code review and a senior engineer will be like, this isn't really how we do things because you need to redirect it. This needs to be turned into smaller functions. You're using different style conventions here. To me, AI today is more like a junior developer. I do know people are saying it's more like a mid-level developer. To me, it really feels like a junior developer who is able to produce tons of code. Whatever code it's going to produce, it probably works, but it doesn't fit into your current standards or it might not work longer term. I hope we're moving towards that sort of mid-level where it's just a little bit of nitpicks, like maybe you should use X, Y, or Z there and you can use some prompting to instruct the model to do better. I don't feel I'm not worried about losing my job. I'm a lifelong developer. I saw things change. I'm able to produce much more code today, much faster. I'm able to tweak it and turn it into whatever I want it to be. So I'm not worried about losing my job at all. But I do feel there might be developers losing their job because they're doing jobs that might be harder, might be easier to replace. Imagine you're a WordPress developer, for example. You're creating WordPress themes. Maybe that's not a long-term job anymore because you can easily create WordPress themes using large language models. But maybe this person can now start an agency and have models do the work, be better at marketing, be better at customizing things to every user's need. So I think it's going to lead to more work and more work. And maybe in 5 years or 10 times or 10 years, we're going to see a decrease of work.
Now, if people are listening, they say, hey, there's this Roy guy, and he even says he's helped automating his job day to day. That's amazing. What is he automating? How is he automating it? I wanted a few minutes, right, for us to talk about how are you using LLMs in terms of constructing them? You're talking to a technical audience here, mostly technical folks who build. Are you using LangChain? Are you using Maiden? That's another popular one folks are reaching for. And aside from what you're specifically willing to share about what you're automating in your day-to-day, giving any advice to interesting tools, frameworks, or other sorts of projects, people can go look up on GitHub after this podcast.
Yeah, sure. So it's two parts again. If I work on personal projects, I use Cursor. If I work on company projects, I work at IBM and we have something called an X Code Assistant. That's what I use on the work side. As mentioned, I'm most excited about building apps. I really like LangGraph, even though there's a lot of pushback on LangGraph. But I like it because it's simple enough for people to understand. And you get the entire LangChain ecosystem for free. There's tons of things in the ecosystem that kind of makes sense to use. If you have to use multi-agent systems, I really like Crew AI because they're just really good at creating those small containerized agents, able to work well together. On top of that, there's tons of new frameworks and startups that probably by the time this podcast is available, there's more and more. I would really advise people to go on X or LinkedIn or Blue Sky or whatever is your source of data and try out all the things. I take every Sunday afternoon, I'm going to take 2 or 3 hours to try out a new tool and see if I like it, see if it makes sense for me to use. So I'd really advise people to do the same. Go to social media, find new tools, try them out, have a look at the trending reports because there's new frameworks every day. And on that note, I really start to like Goose, which is from Block. And it's a really nice agent builder that's using MCP, which is a new protocol by Anthropic, which really excites me because it makes it easier for developers to build your own servers. So it is called tool servers, and then connect those to different interfaces, like whether it's an agent app running somewhere or a code editor or a chat application. So this MCP framework or protocol, it's really helping on one side, people building tools for agents, and on the other side, people building those agents that need tools.
Our Crew AI has been really popular on YouTube as well. I know folks are showing videos of building stuff and having great success. So if you're listening, you haven't heard of it, definitely you can head over to YouTube. There's a lot of good tutorials over there. Roy, do you do tutorials yourself? Do you write or blog about these AI topics if people want to follow you?
I have my own YouTube channel where I try to record some of those tools I try out on Sundays. And then you can find me on all the different IBM channels talking about those different products we have over there. For me, creating content is a way to learn. So it's not perfect. I typically create tons of beginner content because I feel like the more complex content requires more in-depth knowledge of a specific framework. And I typically like to fumble with things at the edge and see whatever I like. And I usually share these things on LinkedIn or Twitter or Blue Sky. So yeah, make sure to follow me there if you want to learn more about the different tools I try out.
Could you just spell out your handle in case folks listening want to go search you up?
Oh, it's at GetHackTeam.
GetHackTeam, all one word.
All one word, yeah. I once had an idea to start a company where we would organize hackathons all over the world. So that's how I started with the handle. And this is, I don't know, 9 years ago. So I just kept it.
The handle has lore.
Yeah.
So Roy, what we're going to do now is our quick round section. It's where I'm going to throw some questions at you. Try to answer them in under 30 seconds. Sometimes it's not possible and that's okay, but that's the goal.
Cool.
So the first question, what's the biggest myth about AI that developers still believe?
I think the biggest myth is that AI is a silver bullet that's going to solve all your problems without you building application logic on top of it. So the app layer is where developers should focus rather than trying out the best models.
What's the biggest mistake developers make when using AI tools?
I think the biggest mistake we make is assuming the model knows how to handle your data, especially if it's a lot of data or if it's secure data. So I see people pasting all sorts of data into chats and just thinking it's going to be safe and it's going to be well handled.
If you could improve one thing about LLMs today, what would it be? And you can get specific here, like context window or like certain controls and how they work, or it could be non-specific.
I think context window is solved already. You can import like entire books in it. What I would like to see is more built-in guardrails. So assuming you paste in a lot of data, I would expect LLMs to be better at handling that data if it includes personal data.
I like the hail to the prior point here about pasting secrets into chat. Okay, last one. What excites you the most about the future of AI in web development? And if you could, let's try to scope that to 2025, and then you could give a quick follow-up of just in general the next decade. What excites you?
So I guess in this year, what excites me most is seeing almost all developers I talk to working with AI frameworks and building their own code solutions on top of AI or using AI. So that really excites me this year. If I think about the next decade, I really hope we go to a place where you would start your computer in the morning. You can see your list of tasks you need to get done. You have AI, you have agents helping you get those things done. At the end of the day, you log back in and you can see a pull request and you're just directing AI, have it do things better. And then you go on with your life. I would really hope to see those improvements in day-to-day life.
That sounds like a great future. And hopefully some folks who aren't into AI development, maybe this podcast inspired you to go take a look and help us build towards that future. But all in all, Roy, it was great to have you on. It was great to hear about how somebody who's deep in the space right now is having a realistic view at what AI can and cannot do and how it's being integrated into software stacks today. So just to reiterate, if anybody listening wants to go check out Roy's YouTube channel, it's Get Hack Team, all one word. And you said you're on Blue Sky and X, right, as well?
Yes, and LinkedIn and YouTube and all the other places people hang out.
Thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure, Roy.
Thank you, Paul.